Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
My name is Wade Ierley. I live in Lehi, Utah, and I run an impact-focused venture capital firm.
Awesome. So can you just tell me more about your firm, really just how you got the idea to start it?
I joined this firm in May of last year. I spent the last 15 years probably building companies, and I was on the road too much. So I think I was credited with 120 nights in Marriott's alone, last year. And so when my oldest turned 13, I realized I missed too much of his 12-year-old year, and I wanted to be a different kind of dad. So I sent an email out to, like 8 or 9 friends and family and folks I knew and said, hey, I haven't been a free agent since before 9/11, probably. I don't really know how to do this, but I'm looking for somewhere I can be for 10 years. So my oldest was turned 13. My youngest was 7. And I realized if I want to be the dad I want to be, I've got 10 years of being that sort of active dad. And then I can go back to being startup selfish and being on the road all the time and building whatever I want. So I did that. And a good friend of mine said, I have just the thing. I have a 10-year fund. You ought to come run. I looked at a number of things, but ultimately, what Double River does, we invest in emerging markets, in super talented founders, in places where, in addition to the growth or the impact that your business has, there's like a knock-on effect of that it has a positive impact in the society and community around it. So we get to do a lot of good in some places that need it, and work with some really, really talented founders and help elevate folks that otherwise have perhaps more challenges getting access to capital and sort of Western market structures, et cetera.
For sure. So I guess like for somebody who's not familiar with what you do, like what does a typical day look like for you?
This morning I got up, scraped 9 inches of snow off my car, made it to the office at 5 something. I began with calls in Nairobi and in Ghana, talking with founders there. One was giving advice to a founder we have not invested in yet. Another call was with a company we're looking at investing in. The first one's probably not an investment, but it's it's a founder that we like. And I spend a lot of my time in meetings with portfolio companies, helping them better manage, set goals, open up my network to them and see how we can help them achieve their aims. And then I meet with a lot of, entrepreneurs, wantrepreneurs, people who have everything from early stage concepts to, they've already got revenue. We're an early stage venture fund. And so I talk to those companies and figure out if I can get conviction, by which I mean, I get enough belief in that company and that founder and that vision to invest capital. And then I spend part of my day often meeting with LPs and potential LPs. These are the limited partners who invest in us, who give us capital that we then allocate to these companies. So those are kind of the two sides of the business that we spend a lot of time in, and what I spend most of my time doing. I've got a team as well. And so we spend some time, organizing, working with that team, but, traditional, team management stuff you'd expect.
For sure. I mean, obviously you can't 100% predict everything, but when you're meeting with people, like, what are some things that separates the founder? Like, okay, these are going to be successful founders versus the ones like, okay, like, I'm just going to take a pass on this one.
Well, I'll back it up just a little bit further before we get to the people. So Wall Street transacts trillions of dollars every day trying to predict tomorrow, and they're not very good
at it.
Right. They're as good as we get, but also not great.
Right.
One of the core theses of our fund is that we can invest predictably in the future. And by that, we mean, that Bank of America has to exist before Visa, and Visa before PayPal, and PayPal before Square, and Square before Stripes. And you have, 150 years of the development of modern sort of financial structures here in the United States or in the West, Northern Hemisphere. Lots of ways to describe that, but in the developed world. When you're investing in emerging markets, a lot of times people look at that and think, oh, it's risky. You're in the Philippines, you're in Ghana, you're, wherever. And because it's unknown or less familiar, they'll assign a level of risk to it. In practice, though, it's like traveling back in time. So because you know that Visa has to exist before PayPal and PayPal before Square, instead of what most large venture capital firms do in the United States and in the West is we focus on finding innovators and disruptors, people who are going to, you know, with a tiny fraction of the balance sheet, displace major market leaders, right? Or new technology development like, you know, OpenAI did with ChatGPT, right? And suddenly everyone's like aware of LLMs and wants to push into that. What we do is a little bit different. We look and say, okay, where are these economies, where are these countries at developmentally? And we've identified 9 countries that are at similar spots. So Vietnam, Indonesia, the Philippines, Ghana, Uganda, Kenya, Nigeria, sometimes Egypt and South Africa, Uruguay and Iraq. And for different reasons, all of those countries are at a place where, you know, you've got 97% of them have electricity, 1.2 cell phones per person. So that's considered full cell phone penetration. You've got, 60%, 40 to 60% will have internet access every day. And now a lot of those phones, by the way, the cell phones I mentioned won't be smartphones. They'll be feature phones still, right? But probably less than 40% have ever had a bank account and fewer than 5% have ever had a credit card. So if you think about how the economies are going to develop, these are cash economies still, right? So this is Web 1.0. This is eBay and, you know, early stuff, because you can't buy something online. You don't have basic e-commerce if you can't put 16 digits into a website, right? If you don't have a credit card or a bank account, well, you can't, you know, participate in a global sort of e-commerce world. So we look and we like to invest in things we call financial inclusion, right? We invested in a bank in Africa called Affinity that we really like. They were a microfinance lender for a long time, got a full banking license. The first one Ghana gave out in the last 10 years. And, 90% of their account holders are first-time bank account holders, 60% of them women. So now they can transact and do things online as it's experiencing massive growth. So that's the kind of business that we like. And the founder, you know, Ghanaian, educated, he had a PhD at 23 from Imperial College in London. Like, he's just super sharp. Tariq Mugani's his name. And he's got all the sort of grit and work ethic that you'd hope for in a founder. I've yet to find a time of day where I email him anywhere in the world and I don't get an immediate response, right? That's a good indicator to your direct question.
Right. But
when we're looking at Affinity and when we're looking at these 9 countries, so we're a global fund, but when we look at these 9, we know, we can say, all right, we think in 2 years they can be the largest retail bank in Ghana. So we think they can be Bank of America, right? Or Wells Fargo, or whoever the largest retail bank is here. So instead of finding a disruptor, we go back in time and we invest in Wells Fargo at its founding. And then because they know, they can see the playbook, they know the next thing is Visa and then PayPal and then, you know, whatever else. It doesn't take 150 years to do that. All it gets to truncate. And so the next step of they'll build is a, you know, payment-to-payment solution, and you get PayPal, right? Peer-to-peer payments. And then, you know, and so you can kind of see it. So we think it's more predictable because the emerging markets let us travel back in time developmentally, right? And so that's right. That's the play we like. We think it's a little more reliable. We also, though, we're a global fund with an impact hurdle, meaning we only invest in things that we think can have a knock-on effect where they do good. We like this predictable story about digitalization super cycles and taking cash economies and moving them online. But some of the things we really like about that is credit and credit worthiness systems unlock lending. Banking unlocks, you know, we can empower individuals in their own capitalist structures to build businesses and grow. So in Ghana, as an example, since I was talking about Affinity, if you run a bodega, you've got a shop of some kind and you make $300 a month in revenue, it takes a decade to save up enough money to open a second bodega, right? A second storefront, whatever it is. And that's a decade with no external economic shocks, no husband got sick, no economy tanked, no school fees changed, you know, like it's 10 stable years. And that's hard. Hard a lot of places, but especially in the developing world. If, however, we can and get you to put that $300 a month into a bank account, even if you're not holding it there, even if you're not saving, we just see it go in and out every month. In a year and a half, that bank can lend against what they know is your revenue, right, stream. And so you unlock the ability for this father or mother or business owner, entrepreneur, right, to expand to a second storefront and do it much, much faster. So that's the kind of impact that investing in a retail bank in Ghana can have, right? And like I said, 90% of their accounts are first-time bank account holders, right? Most in the developing world, what you'll find is a lot of Western banks that have captured the wealth management market, right? It's the people with a lot of money. But that, right. You know, that person selling candles at a bodega doesn't often have that bank account. And so we can invest in a bank like that. We also, though, in the Philippines, can invest in a company like Peddler. Peddler helps the same mom and pop store build its online presence. So think of it like a Shopify for, you know, sorries, which are like these bodegas, right? And so now, instead of one having to migrate to the big city in, you know, to Manila in order to like find your fortune, right? make a good living, you stay right where you're at. But now the number of people who walk past your storefront, which is how you make money today, expands exponentially because now you have a digital storefront. So we empower these entrepreneurs to build and grow their businesses, be more stable in their revenue streams. So you might not think of, you know, Shopify of the Philippines as an impact play, but we do, right? We think anywhere you can empower individuals and business owners to pursue the things they want to, right? It has tremendous impact, and you bring a lot of real economic value. The Philippines is an example. I think the GDP of the Philippines is $450 billion a year. The GDP right. of Filipinos living outside of the Philippines is $380 billion a year. So the diaspora of Filipinos working other places earn about that much. And then there's a huge piece that gets remitted back to the Philippines. It's a significant part of the Philippine economy. Anyway, so it creates a lot of opportunity there. So that's how we think about investing. We think instead of risk on risk, like VC is considered a risky category and emerging markets are often considered risky. We think it's the opposite of both of those because we get to invest less in disruptors, more in market leaders or nascent market leaders, and in predictable business models, predictable future that we know is coming. And so instead of risk on risk, we're right. risk off. Yeah.
Right. Well, I guess for you, right? Because you mentioned that before you were traveling all the time. So, I mean, what about now? Like, do you ever travel to these countries, or do you have people like on your team that go there? Like, you know, what does that look like?
All the time. So the intention when I took the job was that I'd have a lighter travel schedule. And it is lighter on a per day basis, probably. I wasn't 120 nights in a hotel, you know, the first year doing this. That said, since September, I made 3 trips to Southeast Asia and 2 to the Middle East. I canceled the trip this week to Africa, because I had another one scheduled in February. So I'm spending about a week to 10 days a month outside of the US. So there's certainly plenty of travel right now. We will go raise another probably $40 million for our fund in Q2. And so it's a different set of travel that I'll be in New York and LA and Hong Kong, as opposed to any of these markets where I'm placing capital. So there's a fair bit of travel, but I will tell you, you know, the intent was to be the more intentional dad, right? I also, late last fall, was head coach of a 5th grade tackle football team, and wouldn't have been able to do that when I was running a startup. And I've got a little linebacker. Well, we moved into free safety halfway through the season. I got a little free safety who was pretty excited about that. And then my oldest, I took with me to both to the Philippines and to the UAE on a trip over Thanksgiving. And then we, you know, pulled him out of school for a week and let him see what I do. And he traveled with me, and you know, he looked at a bunch of companies. He's on a team that won a pitch competition at a startup conference in the Philippines.
That's awesome.
You know, he met with a sheikh that we've been courting to be in our fund. He's a little entrepreneur because he's got an entrepreneur for a dad. So he has a vending machine company, like a route that he runs here in town. And he's got a board game design company because he loves board games. They've never released a game, but he's got this, you know, theoretical company. So while we were in the Philippines, we visited 9 board game stores. We did almost like a board game progressive across, you know, a major world city. And he got to see how they operate and how they make money and talk to the people that own them. And, you know, I told somebody, startups made bringing dogs to work cool, you know, 15 years ago or something. I think bringing kids to work is way better.
So that's true, yeah.
And candidly, before, I was going to interesting to me places, but, you know, Jackson, Mississippi and Des Moines, Iowa, don't sound like pull your kid out of school, you got to see this right now places. And it's a little easier to get to, so you're always gonna have a chance to go back. Whereas, like, hey, I don't know, if things change, if you get a chance to go back and see, you know, Tanzania again, so come with me, take a little time. And we've been able to do that. So I think I've been threading the needle on traveling and doing and being the dad I want a little bit better here. It is fewer days on the road, and at least once I've been able to bring a kiddo with me. So
when you're navigating, you know, through these countries, like, is it easy to get around? Like, do most people, you know, speak English? Like, what does that look like?
So the countries we invest in predominantly conduct business in English. So if you think about the four countries in Southeast Asia that I mentioned, Ghana, Uganda, Nigeria, and Kenya, all of those are English-speaking countries. There's a huge part of Africa that's French-speaking, right? And Cote d'Ivoire is a more stable economy than even Ghana, which has been sort of the standard for Africa for the last little bit, but they had a recent banking challenge. So, but I don't speak French. My wife speaks a little French, but I'd be hard pressed to conduct a lot of business in French. We do have a deal we've invested in the Congo, French speaking. And so we can do businesses in those places, but it's a whole lot easier to do it in English. And if you haven't spent a lot of time abroad, it feels more daunting than it is. The reality of, you know, you remember Friedman's The World is Flat was a big book probably 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
The world really is, right? So if you want to do business and build startups, you're looking at YC and you're reading Paul Graham online and you're hoping to get funded by a Silicon Valley firm. And those business models that are emanating from the US out mean that the people who want to engage in that business often are English speakers, often, but not always, certainly. And the quality of that English varies. I'm a Russian speaker, which 10 years ago might have been more useful. Today, we don't do any business in Russia. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's a little more complex dynamic. So it doesn't help me as much. But on my team, I've got a Korean speaker. I've got a Finnish speaker. So, you know, we collect some language ability, but we don't necessarily hire for it because mostly the ironic term is lingua franca, meaning the French language, but it's the language of the world that the business is conducted in most places. You know, Singapore, the Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, everything's been done in English.
For sure. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started your career?
Most people settle for the options set in front of them. So you graduate college and you apply for jobs and then you take one of the jobs that says yes. Very few people work backwards from where they want to be, in large part because they probably don't know where they want to be. I didn't. I did exactly this, right? I looked at what jobs were available. I was in the first graduating class after 9/11, and I joined an intelligence agency. It seemed like the thing to do at the time. And I applied to an intelligence agency, I got hired. It took 5.5 years to do a security clearance, and then I joined. But I took the option sets that were in front of me. Later in life, I've come to understand how powerful it is to think through where I want to be in very real terms, like 10 years from now. There's 100 paths that could get me to that spot. But if you don't have a destination in mind, every path is a fine one. You're never going the wrong direction. And most people just accept what falls in their lap. And I think the happiest people, there are two types of happy people. There are people for whom work is not the defining part of what they do, right? Or who they are. And so it just checks a box, does its job, and other parts of their life are very satisfying. For someone like me, I love what I do and I love going to work and I loved it when I was an operator and I love doing this. And when I was building businesses, I loved it when I worked for the government. I'm very sort of, I value the intellectual stimulation and the team and the rest. I think having a direction and knowing more than directionally, but knowing like, hey, this is, you know, to give an example, this is not mine, but if you wanted to be a U.S. ambassador, either donate a lot of money to the president or you work through the Foreign Service, right? But if you didn't know you wanted, so some people will say, hey, that's what I want to do. And I can spend 20 years and there's a couple paths to get there. Most people will just be, I don't know, they took a government job. Now they're in the Foreign Service. And 20 years later, they might find themselves an ambassador, right? And so I think working backwards helps a lot. An example I might give, I gave advice to an NYU student. I speak in a class there once a semester generally, have for about 8-9 years. And I always invite the students to connect with me afterwards and nobody ever takes me up on it. And I had this young girl who called me. So we met at Union Station in New York City. And she said, I've got internship opportunities at Facebook and Google. And I have one at a startup and I'm not sure what I should do. She's like, and I said, well, walk me through your decision. She says, well, if I go to Facebook or Google, I get... you know, I'm probably doing less interesting work as an intern, right? I'm probably getting a lot of coffee and making a lot of copies and taking notes in meetings, but I get a name brand. And if I go to a startup, I do more stuff, but no one will know what I've done, right? So my experience would probably be like more substantive, but there's no brand cachet, no familiarity. So, okay. what is it you want to do? What do you want after college? She's like, oh, I want to go to like Bain or McKinsey, you know, management consultant. Okay, great. Now we have a target. Let's work backwards. So what do they want to hire for? Well, they want you to have good communication skills and to be familiar with business best practices. And okay, so now you can do both of those at Google and Facebook or a startup, right? Like, yeah, both are there. And that's why it's a hard decision. I said, great. This is your sophomore year internship. If it was me, I would move to the beach in Costa Rica for the summer and learn to surf. Number one, no one's ever going to ask you what you did for your sophomore year of internship. Number two, while you're there, I would take the 25 best business books, you know, Good to Great and sort of whatever those classics are of, you know, and the top of the list right now. And I'd record a YouTube video of me giving a 5-minute book report on each one. Have a YouTube channel with zero viewers. It doesn't matter. Because the first thing each one of those McKinsey or Bain or whatever are going to do is Google you, right? And video comes up first, and they're going to see you effectively communicating modern best business practices, and you're going to, and it'll make you, it'll better qualify you for that job than either putting Google on a resume or the other, and you'll have more fun. Plus, you get your junior year internship anyway, where you can go get one of those. But they might ask what you did, you know, after your, the summer after your junior year, because they're going to hire you your senior year. But nobody's going to ask about the year before. So that's what, you know, there's another, perhaps more interesting, would have been more interesting to me, option set there that she didn't even see because she was just looking at the options that were in front of her, right? And I think working backwards from, okay, I want to be a consultant at McKinsey unlocks the fact that there are lots and lots of paths to get there. So I think if I had it to do over again, or the advice I wish I'd have known early was there are lots of paths to get where you want, and you get to optimize for the paths that you'd enjoy the most, right?
That's for sure. And that's awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing a website or social media? I guess best ways to get in contact with you?
Sure. At Wade Ierley. I've got a unique enough name. I'm pretty easy to Google. There's only probably 300 Ierleys on the planet. Two brothers stowed away on a boat and arrived at Ellis Island is the story. And I don't know if it's probably apocryphal, but they didn't speak English, and they were asked what your name is. They thought they were asked, what do you do? And if they didn't have a skill, they'd be sent home. And they said, essentially, dad's an egg farmer. Ierley is apparently son of an egg farmer in German, or has some root behind that. So we're all related. There's only so many of us, but it's Wade, W-A-D-E. Last name is E-Y-E-R-L-Y. So at Wade Ierley on Twitter, wade.ierley@doubleriver.com is an email. More than welcome to reach out. I spend a lot of my time, like I said, every day talking to founders and would-be founders about their businesses and helping them get where they want to go. So I'm happy to hear from anybody.
Awesome. Well, Wade, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure chatting, Dan.
Thanks. All right. Bye.